You are listening to Give Grief a Chance, and I'm your host and advanced grief recovery specialist, Diane Morgan. And these podcasts are all about bringing grief awareness out into the world, because even today, my friends, grief is hidden and it's tucked away. So come along and join me on this journey. Let's start to bring grief out into the open. And maybe you'll be brave enough to give your grief a voice. This is episode 250. Hello to all of my lovely podcast listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Give Grief a Chance. I hope that you're all doing really well, and as always, I'd like to say a big thank you to everyone who takes the time to listen to these podcasts. And also a quick reminder about my journal, which is called Giving Grief a Voice. It's a beautiful gift that can help to guide and support you through your grief. It's filled with writing prompts, breathing exercises, self-care tips, and much, much more. And you can find it on Amazon. So this week, I'm having a chat with Brooke Carlott. Now, Brooke is a very inspiring woman who is certainly no stranger to grief. You see, in the span of a year and a half, Brooke lost her dad, stepmom, a mum, and her beautiful 10-year-old daughter Libby in a tragic car accident. However, Brooke keeps getting back up, and she's gone from the darkest of depths to becoming a grief educator, author, a YouTuber, and a podcast host, where she shares her grief story and hopes to inspire others with practical advice and some sarcastic humour. Plus, she's just written a book which is called Grief Sucks, But Your Life Doesn't Have To. So without further ado, let's have a chat with Brooke. Hello, Brooke, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Hello, Diane. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So let's jump in and start off with some questions. So can you share with us a bit about your journey through grief?
Yes. So it started, the biggest event that had happened grief-wise in my life was when I was 24, my sister died, and her name was Shannon. She actually passed away very unexpectedly. She was only 32 when she died, and she was sick, and we thought it was just the regular cold, and it ended up being pneumonia. And she went to sleep one night and just did not wake up. Her lungs actually filled up with fluid when she was sleeping, and she passed away when she was sleeping. And that was a complete shock. So that was really my first kind of taste of grief. And then a few years after that, my sister-in-law Heather passed away. She had had a surgery and had had complications from the surgery, and it ended up she needed a transplant, and then got transplant-related brain cancer, which I didn't even know was a thing. But then she died from that and was also in her early 30s. So our family was kind of hit. My cousin also died in her early 30s. So we had all of these, you know, young women in our family dying, and I hit my early 30s and was just grateful that I was still around, you know.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And then everything sort of changed. I had a very rough series of months. It was November of 2021, and my dad died from a heart attack on the side of the road. We had no idea, you know, no warning or anything. You know, he seemed okay and was on his way home from work, and we're guessing knew something was wrong and pulled to the side of the road and then died on the side of the road before he could get a hold of anyone. And that was devastating. I loved my dad very much. So that was and he was big and strong and one of those people you feel like nothing's ever going to happen to them, you know? So that was awful. And then everything sort of snowballed. I was helping my stepmom with my dad's funeral plans. And mm-hmm. then on the day of my dad's funeral, my stepmom didn't show up and we didn't know where she was. I ended up getting a phone call at the funeral home, and it was my stepmom's brother telling me that she had overdosed on pills and alcohol, and she died on the day of my dad's funeral. It was suicide. She completed suicide. She did not want to be around. She was an alcoholic and she had a lot mm-hmm. of health problems, and we're assuming she just couldn't imagine. My dad pretty much took care of her. So that was a shock. So then I had to help plan her funeral right after my dad's funeral. And then mm-hmm. a month after that, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So then it was like, great, I've lost my dad, I've lost my stepmom. And now, you know, I'm being told that my mom has a few months and I'm kind of reeling from all of that. And then when you think it can't get any worse, the worst possible thing that could have ever happened to me happened, what every parent dreads. I got the phone call that my oldest son, Max, who was 18 at the time, and my 10-year-old daughter, Libby, were in a car accident, and Libby did not make it. So my 10-year-old daughter, Libby, died. She was the absolute light of my life. And, you know, it was everything that had happened in my life before that just immediately paled in comparison to losing my daughter. That was really kind of the catalyst for, you know, everything that I'm doing now.
Right. Wow. Can you tell us about Libby? I mean, how would you describe
absolutely
it? What kind of kid was she like?
Oh my gosh. She was, I know every parent thinks that they have the greatest kid in the world, but she truly, I mean, if you could imagine the perfect child there, seriously, she was just a light, just a ray of sunshine from the time she was born. It was just nothing but sheer positivity. She was the kindest, sweetest little girl, just funny and outgoing and just so unbelievably helpful to people. I love hearing stories about her because, you know, all of her teachers in school just adored her. And every year we'd go into, you know, parent teacher conferences and hear how she was just the greatest kid ever. But what people loved about her was that she was a friend to everyone. She was the kid who would go in the cafeteria and sit with someone who didn't have anyone else to sit with. Mm-hmm. And she would invite people to play with her at recess if they were sad, you know. And she was a competitive dancer. Dance was her life. She absolutely loved it.
Awesome. Yeah.
And yeah. So that was her thing. Dance was her thing from the time she was tiny. She used to walk on her toes with her toe. On a podcast, it's hard to explain, but she would actually walk like up on her toes and it looked excruciatingly painful, but it was fine. And everybody kept saying like, she needs to be a ballerina. So we got her in dance and she was crazy flexible, could do like contortionist styled moves. So she picked up dance so quickly and just loved it and spent almost every day at the dance studio and got invited to be on their competition team and just loved the competitions and everything about dance.
That's great. So it wasn't so much ballet or anything that she...
No, I mean, she did do ballet. That was obviously part of like, you know, if you're for good dance training, you have to do the ballet, but she did all different styles. She was particularly fond of modern. She really loved modern dance for someone her age. And this is what, you know, I'm not a dance expert, but from what her teachers would tell me, like for someone of her age, she could just feel the music more than I guess a typical child can, you know. Mm-hmm. She knew when and where to do things and she just felt it and you could see it in her dancing, like in her moves and on her face. And I could go on forever.
Wow.
Would make up dances on her own and I would record her at home from the time she was little. And I loved watching that progression, but
you have lots of videos then, dance moves.
Yes. Actually, we have, I'll talk about it then, but we have a foundation that I started called
Awesome.
Live Like Libby. And that's what we do. We raise money for dancers who are in financial need because we know, as a parent, I know how expensive it was trying to keep her. I mean, we had to tell her sometimes that she couldn't take certain classes or couldn't do certain competitions because we just couldn't afford it. It's so much money between the costumes and the fees. And we wanted to make sure that every child that wants to dance is able to dance. So we raise money.
That's fantastic.
For dancers. So yeah, if you go to livelikelibby.org, there are videos.
Well, you're going to tell us where everything at the end of this, where people can find your book.
Absolutely.
You know, losing a loved one can feel like the world is crumbling beneath our feet. So how did you find the strength to keep moving forward after facing such immense loss in such a short period of time?
Yeah, it was rough. So I guess the easiest way to describe it, I mean, obviously I was sad after I lost my dad and my stepmom and I found out about my mom's cancer, but Libby's loss just sort of changed everything for me. Two different answers here. So one, I had a lot of things to focus on immediately. So I feel like I survived those first couple months just on sheer adrenaline. I was numb. Like I was zoned out and I was just getting stuff done that needed to get done. Like until someone close to you dies, you don't realize how much like crap you have to do, paperwork and all this kind of stuff. And so I just dove right in immediately to planning. I wanted everything to be perfect. So I wrote her whole, funeral service by myself. And I wrote her obituary and made compilation videos of her dancing and photo montages and all of that. So I just dove into like honoring her the best way that I could. And also my son, Max, who was driving the car when she was killed, he had a head injury. So I always tell people like in the immediate aftermath after we went, because I went to the accident site and they wouldn't let us near the car because they didn't want us to see Libby. But my son had been taken in an ambulance to the hospital. So there was distraction there for me because I was worried about him also. Yep. And he's fine. If anyone's wondering, he's fine.
I was going to ask. Yeah. How's he doing?
He is fully recovered. It was mostly just a concussion. He had memory issues for a little while, but they resolved themselves. Gratefully he was just, cut up and bruised and had a concussion, but otherwise he is perfectly healthy and fine now. Which obviously I'm, immensely grateful for, but we didn't know that at the time. So it was, another focus on, okay, what can we do to help our son to get through this? So I had that to focus on. And then once that all kind of died down and the funeral was passed, then that was, I think, the roughest point for me, because then everything just settles and sinks in and it is so overwhelming. So for me, I think what helped me, I always say it all the time, is I'm a huge nerd. So I just research constantly. Like I just started diving into like every grief book I could find, every podcast, every video, like everything about grief, just looking for like, how do I survive this? I had joined a couple of grief groups on Facebook and I tell people now like that I don't recommend that right away because they can be, I love grief groups, but right at the beginning, they can be so disheartening seeing so many people that are years and years out and they are still crying every day and struggling. Yeah. And it just makes you feel so hopeless.
Right.
So honestly, just that was my surviving, my coping mechanism was just learning That's
So
what I
your story is incredibly inspiring, Brooke. Can you tell us if there was a specific moment or an experience that stands out to you as a turning point in your grief journey?
So along with being a nerd, I have been a freelance writer my whole adult life. So writing, I immediately started writing, just journaling and getting my feelings out that way.
Great.
And then I am very introverted. So people kept asking me all the time, how are you? How are you doing? Is there anything I can do? And rather than having these one-on-one phone conversations with people, I started a blog. So I had actually started a blog called Grieving Mommy. And that was kind of how everything started for me, where it was just me posting my feeling. It was basically like online journal entries at first. And I think the moment, if I had to pick where things started to turn, it's when that started picking up. And I started getting comments from people all over the world saying, like, thank you for being so honest and sharing what this is really like. And I just started understanding that people just wanted to know that they weren't alone.
Absolutely.
And they wanted to feel like they're not crazy. And I did not sugarcoat anything. I did not hold anything back. You know, I tell people the month after Libby died, I enrolled myself in a day program at a mental health hospital because I was so low and I did not know how to fix it. And I knew that I needed extra help. And, you know, I shared that with people, and then people just responded like, thank you for talking about it out loud. And saying like, you're not okay. And you do have to go on medication. And, you know, a lot of people don't like sharing those kind of details about themselves. And it was just like, you know what, I'll just put it all out there. And I think people responded to that.
That's really great. I mean, I think it's so important for people to know that it's okay to talk about, it's okay to reach out. It's okay to be vulnerable, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
You know? I mean, you know, as we know, grief is a lonely road to travel. So did you find support and connection during the darkest moments? And what advice would you give or would you offer to others who may be feeling isolated in the grief?
So I would say this was definitely my most challenging area. Because, and I say this often, you know, in my videos and in my book, I am very introverted, and people that don't know me well, because they see me on YouTube and doing podcasts and things like that, they assume that I'm not, but I really am. Like, I much prefer to be curled up on my sofa reading a book by myself, you know, than at a party or having a conversation. And that is difficult when you're grieving, because it is so isolating. So my biggest struggle, honestly, was taking people up, learning to take people up on their offers. I learned how important that was, that even if it made me uncomfortable, when someone said, do you want to go get a cup of coffee? I started saying yes, not all the time, you know, but every now and then I would say, you know what? All right. I need to get out of my house for a minute. I need to, you know, put on normal clothing and
take a shower.
Yes. And head out and enter the real world and just have a conversation. And I found that even though I'm introverted, and even though most times I had to drag myself to do something like that, I always felt better afterwards. You know, it was always like, oh, it was nice to actually talk to someone. And I tell people, so I guess my advice would be, you kind of have to figure out who your people are for specific things that you need. So for example, my ex-husband, David, we are not married anymore, but we are, you know, Libby's parents.
Yep.
And he, more than anyone else in this world, understands what I'm feeling, because he has also lost the greatest daughter ever. So, so he is my go-to person when I am really down or I really need to vent and get personal and cry. He's the person that I call because I know he understands and he doesn't mind listening to me. And I do the same thing.
That's correct.
But then I have other friends, you know, I have a friend that I walk with every week and she's happy to just let me vent about whatever I need to vent to. But then I also have, you know, more casual acquaintances where if I don't want to get into like the deep grief talk, I know I have people that I can, you know, do something with or have a lunch with or whatever, yeah. that it's more casual and surface. And sometimes you need that.
Absolutely.
As well. So you just sort of figure out kind of who your people are for which situation and kind of make sure you have at least one person kind of in each of those deep categories and yep. surface categories.
That's you know? Such great advice, actually.
Thanks. Yeah.
It really is. Did you join a support group or not after?
I tried a few in person. I did the Compassionate Friends for a while and yep. and I love that organization. The meeting was great. I think that I tried to join it perhaps too early when I went. I think it was too soon yeah, and yeah. I was too raw. Yep. Like I said, I did join a couple of grief groups online.
Uh-huh.
And I bailed on those earlier, but then I found them more helpful a few months down the road
gotcha.
From my loss. I saw a private therapist. So I did have a therapist mm-hmm. that I work with personally. Right. And then I had the really intense inpatient group that I was working with at the day program at the mental yep. health hospital. And then actually after a while, I started my own group specifically for grieving parents.
Awesome.
So that was nice because then I kind of had my own thing, but it was all grieving
yeah,
parents
yeah.
that I could talk with.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so great.
That was kind of what I did there. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So
yeah.
So you've chosen to channel your grief into helping others navigating their own grief journeys. So
yeah.
What motivated you to become a grief educator, an author, and a podcaster? And how has this journey impacted your healing and, process?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is definitely impacted my healing in that. Well, like I said, because I'm a huge nerd, that's automatically yep. the road that I go down. And
yep.
and the journey was just sort of a kind of like a snowball for me, starting with the blog. And then as more people started reading the blog, and then you hear the comments from people saying that you're helping them and thank you for talking about this. And that was so motivating for me because, you know, as you know, when you're grieving, finding a purpose is so important because you mm-hmm. feel like you're just swimming in open water and you have no idea what you're doing and
oh.
you just kind of need somewhere to head. So I loved the encouragement that I got from people who appreciated what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of turned into the YouTube channel. So I started making videos that were pretty similar to the blog that I was doing, just
yep.
sort of video versions of that. And again, then it was even more, you know, as I started getting more subscribers, you get more comments of people like, just thank you for talking about this. And I think people just really responded to how kind of raw and honest I was about things.
Right.
And as time has gone on and the subscribers have grown and things like that, I think people appreciate that along with the honesty that I can be humorous, you know, every now and then.
Perfect.
Like there's nothing funny about losing a child, but even, you know, I didn't even get to that point in my story, but after Libby died, then my mom died from her cancer also. So I went through the process of being a caregiver for her and going through hospice and all of that situation. So I've had so much experience with so many different types
mm-hmm.
of grief
mm-hmm.
that it just sort of turned into, what am I going to do with this? Like, if I don't do something with this, what is the point of it all? You know, there aren't that many people out there that have had these kinds of experiences and so many of them so close together that
right.
if I don't use that for good, then what is the point of all of it? You know, how can I make something out of all of this horrible stuff that has happened? And that was sort of where the book came from, was just people telling me that my videos were helpful and things like that. And it was like, you know what? As time went on and I could look back, I was just thinking, like, what would I have wanted back then? Like, mm-hmm. back in the early days, what? and I realized, like, I would want hope. I would want to know that my life obviously is forever altered. And I don't downplay that at all. Like, I'm the first one to say, I'm never going to be the same person.
Yep.
It's never going to go away. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I've done a good job at kind of growing with that grief and integrating it into my life. And I wanted to help other people do that were struggling. So yeah, that was kind of the impetus behind becoming the grief educator. And I just wanted to be more official. It's like, I've been a teacher for 23 years now. So the videos and the educating comes naturally to me, but I also wanted, you know, the kind of the courses and the classes behind it to back it up, to say, not only have I had these experiences, but I've also studied this stuff now too. just to be more credible.
Absolutely. So your book, I love the title.
Thank you.
Grief sucks, but your life doesn't have to.
Yep.
So this has a title that I'm sure will resonate with so many who've experienced loss. So can you share the inspiration behind the title, and what message do you hope readers will take from it?
Yeah. So the title, I think, perfectly kind of encapsulates my personality in that, like grief sucks. It does. You can't get around it. It's awful. So I didn't want the book to be overly sappy or overly, you know, inspirational. I wanted to acknowledge the horrible nature of losing someone that you love so much. But then I also wanted to infuse it with the hope that I felt like I didn't get when I was in those early days, in the early Facebook groups and looking at people that were so upset. And I just wanted to give people hope. So it's like, yes, this is horrible. Yes, grief absolutely sucks, but I don't want people to feel like the rest of their life they are sentenced to just a lifetime of misery. It doesn't have to be, you will always be sad. You will always miss your person, but there are ways to help yourself grow around that grief, grow with it and mm-hmm. live with it as a companion instead of having it completely overtake your life. Yeah. So that was kind of where the title came from. Just sort of like a little cheeky humor.
I love it.
I have a sarcastic personality.
That's great. I love it.
It just sounded like me.
So, you know, laughter can be such a powerful tool in navigating grief. So I was going to ask you, how have you incorporated humor into your journey?
Like I said, I think that's what people respond to also with me is that, well, okay, I will say it. That's probably the most polarizing thing about me, because some people will see my videos and they'll see me cracking jokes and laughing and be like, how could you laugh about grief? And I understand. I mean, in those early days, if I would see someone laughing, I don't know, it would depend on the day. Sure. Sometimes I would be like, oh my gosh, can I actually laugh again? Like mm-hmm. that gives me hope. And then other days I might've been like, there's nothing funny about this. Why are you laughing? But I had to be true to my own personality, which is, you know, I definitely have a sarcastic edge to my humor, and I just wanted to keep it real. Sure. So I don't sugarcoat things, but also I feel like if you've had so many terrible things happen, mm-hmm. humor sometimes is sort of a defense mechanism for me.
Right.
It is.
Right.
You know, how in the heck is this my life? You know, it's like, it's one of those expressions, you know, it's very cliche, but if you don't laugh, you'll cry. That's kind of how it is. If I
Absolutely.
don't, you know, sometimes if I don't bring a little humor to stuff, you just let the grief overwhelm you, and sometimes it does. It's not always perfect, but I think that there are times that you just kind of look around like, oh my word, like how is this my life? And there are some, you know, I think people can find humor in some of the common things that we share. Why did I walk in this room? You know,
right. Why am I putting my coat in the fridge?
Exactly. So there are parts that I think it's healthy to find.
I agree. And I think it's important for people to know that joy and sadness can coexist.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's just part. It's okay to laugh. It doesn't mean that you're disrespecting or you're forgetting, or it's just part of life. It's part of just growing, I think. And continuing to move through your grief.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, each loss we experience can bring its own unique set of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you learned to honor the individual memories and legacies mm-hmm. while still finding space for your own healing and growth?
Oh, wow. That is such a great question. So yes, because I've had all of these different losses and they're all mm-hmm. very different, I am very honest with people that I still do not feel like I have fully grieved for my mom and dad, because mm-hmm. everything was so close to when Libby died that losing Libby just overwhelmed the grief from losing my parents. And obviously losing your parents is devastating, mm-hmm. but I don't think that I grieved them evenly, if that's a way to describe it, but I do try. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. There are times, and actually with the release of the book, I have found myself grieving my parents a lot with that, because, you know, I say it's kind of weird, even though I'm a middle-aged woman, you know, you still want to call your parents and be like, hey, I'm publishing a book and whatever, like things that you know that they would be proud of you for, you know, I'm 46, but I'm still looking for that, you know, acknowledgement from my parents.
I don't think that ever goes away.
Yeah, like we're proud of you. And there have been so many times with this whole process that I've wanted to just pick up the phone and it's like, I can't, they're not there. You know, there's no one, and there's no one else. You can't call a friend and be like, hey, I'm on a bestseller list, because then you sound like a jerk. but you could call your parents and say something like that. So I've really been missing that part of my relationship with my parents. But as far as honoring them, what I do, I definitely make time to honor them individually. Mm-hmm. I have a ton of things that I do with Libby mm-hmm. because she was such a part of my life, and that's a daily thing. But with my parents, like for my mom, for example, on days that are important in her life, like her birthday, mm-hmm. It's things like baking her chocolate chip cookie recipe, just to remember her, you know, things like that. My dad, for he and I, music was big for us. You know, my musical tastes are mostly because of my dad's songs that he played for me when I was little. So, you know, just hearing those songs that remind me of him and playing those songs when I'm missing him and kind of honoring him in that way. So I think so much of finding meaning when you're grieving and, you know, a good way to move forward in your grief is realizing that you're not going to forget these people that you loved. You are going to, you know, you need to find ways to include them in your daily life moving forward in ways that are positive, you know, that bring you joy and good memories of mm-hmm. that person. And I mm-hmm. do that, for example, with Libby. One thing we do is, you know, the anniversary of her death. It's a horrible, sad day, and you know it's going to be horrible and sad, but we try to make it a little less horrible and sad. And our family, you know, my sons and my ex-husband and I, we get together and we paint rocks with pictures of things that she loved and, you know, messages, positive messages for people. And then we go hiking and we hide them along the trails for people
that's
to find.
Awesome.
And that just gives us such a feeling of, you know, like Libby would have loved that. She would have loved people finding her rocks and brightening someone's day like that. So it's just thinking of things that your person was passionate about or enjoyed and finding ways to honor that in that person.
It's beautiful. I love those. It's great.
Oh, thanks.
I love it. And I think, as you say, finding meaning is really it really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I say with my mom, and not to drag this on, like,
No, I
sometimes feel guilty, like with my mom, because she was diagnosed with her cancer the month before Libby died. And, you know, then Libby died and, you know, I wanted to be a good daughter. And I think I did the best I possibly could. But, you know, when you're going through all the treatments and the chemotherapy and the radiation and everything, like, it was exhausting for me grieving for my daughter. And at the same time, having to take care of my mom and go back and forth to hospitals and things like that. And I've had to just, you know, I did the best that I could. And sometimes I was resentful of that. So I think it's also so important to remember that you're human, you know.
Absolutely.
And do what we can.
Yeah.
And just have a little grace with yourself, you know, be a little easy on yourself, because so much of grief is just doing the best that you can
for you.
And if you have a bad day, you move on one foot in front of the other and wake up tomorrow and try to do the best that you can again.
And I think it's okay to know that resentment is okay. Relief is okay. You know,
absolutely.
We need those. It's just happens.
Yeah.
We're human.
It's so important to realize those normal human experiences are totally fine when you're
absolutely
grieving. Yeah. And normal, which people love hearing. I hear that all the time. Like, oh my gosh, I thought I was a terrible person for thinking like this. Like, no, you're human. It's okay.
Right. Isn't it sad what we put on ourselves?
Yes. We are so hard on ourselves.
Yeah. So what advice would you offer someone in the midst of their own grief journey and those that are struggling to see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, okay. So there are so many things. It's so hard to narrow it down, but okay, I will say this.
You say whatever you have to say.
I just want to give people hope. I want to give people hope that if I am any hope at all, like if I can do this, if I can survive the stuff that I went through, there's nothing special about me. Before all of this happened, I was a normal working suburban mom with three kids. I was exhausted. I was busy. You know, I was just living a normal life. And then I could have never expected the stuff that was going to happen to me. And we don't know how we're going to react to anything until it actually happens to us. And so I just like to say to people, like, there's nothing special about me at all, because I have people say to me all the time, like, well, how are you doing it? How are you still going? And I'm like, I don't know. That's what my book is. It's trying to show you. It's just, I kind of did all of the research that I could find, and I picked and chose what I thought would work for me and just tried different things and saw what stuck and just didn't give up. And there were days when I absolutely wanted to give up, but you just wake up the next day. And just, I like to offer people hope that if I can survive all of this stuff and keep living and keep working, and I can laugh now and I can find joy in things now. And is every day perfect? Absolutely not. I still have terrible days of grief.
Right.
It's not like I'm not crying and I'm happy all the time, but life is worth living and it can be better than you think it can be. So I just like to offer people, like, don't give up that hope. Don't feel like things can't get better. They won't be the same, but they can still be meaningful. So.
Ah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So where can our listeners find out more about you, your podcast, your book, your YouTube, and of course, Libby's?
Yes, there's
we want to know.
Okay, so we'll start with Libby to find out about Libby. And if you want to help the organization, it's livelikelibby.org.
Yep.
And if you go there, you can see pictures of her, read her story, see videos of her dancing. And like I said, our purpose there is to raise money for dancers who are in financial need so that anyone who wants to dance can do that in her honor. And we are so proud of the work that we're doing with that.
Yeah,
we've given away tens of thousands of dollars to dancers who are now dancing and wouldn't have been able to take the classes that they wanted. Yeah. And that just makes our hearts so happy because we know Libby would have absolutely loved that.
Sure.
So that is Libby's information. As far as me, I would say a great starting point would be my website. It's just Brooke Carlock, CARLOCK.org. And then from there, you can find links to my YouTube channel, which is Grief Sucks with Brooke Carlock. My book is the paperback is going to be released April 2nd. So I'm not sure when this is coming out, but April 2nd is the official release of Grief Sucks, But Your Life Doesn't Have To.
Yeah.
And it's just a mix of my story along with what helped me survive my grief. And figuring out that my life didn't have to completely suck. So,
fantastic.
So yeah, I hope your readers, your listeners will find that helpful. The ebook is available March 28th. That's up for pre-order right now. And there is also an audiobook that I recorded. So lots of different ways for you to listen to that. So I would love for anyone who thinks it might be helpful to check that out.
Yeah. Fantastic. I love it. Brooke, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your journey, your wisdom, and your resilience with us today. Your story of turning pain into purpose is nothing short of inspiring, and your willingness to be vulnerable and real with us is a gift. So as we come to the end of our conversation, I want to extend my deepest gratitude for your time and honesty. Your words have undoubtedly touched the hearts of our listeners, offering comfort and a reminder that even in the darkest moments, there is light to be found. And to all our listeners, remember, you don't have to travel alone. Your story matters. Until next time, take good care of yourself and each other. Bye for now. Okay, you lovely people, that is it for this week's episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and that it was helpful for you. If you'd like to find out more about my services and programs, please visit my website, givegriefachance.com. And while you're over there, why not check out my free gifts to you? Because if you're having trouble sleeping, I have a free guided meditation that can help you sleep. If you're feeling really confused about this grief thing, then there's a grief recovery ebook with 61 tips on the experience of grief and how to move through it. And if you're struggling, this is new, with drinking too much alcohol, download my free 4-week addiction journal that will help to keep you focused, motivated, and connected to your recovery journey. And you know you can use this journal on anything that you feel addicted to. So please feel free to use them. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate it, like it, and share it. If you feel like it, come and join me on Instagram at Give Grief a Chance Coach. And last but not least, please never be afraid to give your grief a voice. Okay, my friends, take good care and have a wonderful week.